Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
I'm Heather Choate with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Good. We're glad to have you back here for part two. Last week, we were talking about how to talk about anything with your spouse and be accepted. And I know a lot of you messaged me about that, and I know it really hit home with a lot of you, this feeling like I can be seen for who I really am, and that's good enough, and I can be accepted for who I really am. At the end of the day, we all want to feel like we are loved for who we are. So that's what we're going to go into a little bit more today. And before we get to that, though, I'm going to share a client win of the week. And this one comes from Michelle with permission. She says, "You have helped me so much, Heather. I never could have fixed my relationship with my husband without you and Mark. Every now and then we take a step backwards, and I always come back to both of you and your insight to get me through. Each time it's brought us together. Thank you always for being there and for helping me to see me. Identifying my negatives has helped me fix me and make the wanted changes that have impacted my life and my marriage in a positive way." And so we're super proud of Michelle, and I love that she talks about looking at those negative beliefs, those negative internal beliefs, because we're going to be talking about some of those today as we go into our pillar three of having a unified marriage, which is being able to identify our true core beliefs and live in congruence with those. All right, so Mark, before we dive into that, any thoughts you wanted to share about this win or about the topic? I know you weren't able to join us last week, so you're kind of just jumping in the middle.
I'm just jumping right in, but here's the thing. Like, I think a lot of people look at working on the on a marriage or a relationship as like, here is a distinct period, like we are working on it right here. And Michelle here is saying, like, hey, even though, like, she keeps coming back to some of those things, every now and then she's saying we take a step backwards. But this is like the truth of it, this is a consistent process. And there's not really, in my opinion, like a distinct point where, okay, we don't need to work on things anymore. We can really just step back and let it do its own thing. So I'm glad that Michelle is recognizing that. You know, like a lot of the principles that we teach here with High Thrive Coaching, yeah, are really, really useful for navigating these sort of dire circumstances. But a lot of what we've tried to build into the foundation of what we teach is just general healthy principles for marriage in general. And so, you know, I'm glad that Michelle's getting a lot of use out of this, even after, you know, after she's fixed things.
Yeah. And I like what she says about, like, every now and then we take a step backwards. And Ben and I, in our marriage, we definitely take steps backwards all the time. And it is coming back to those true principles that we teach here about perspective and understanding and getting on the same side, working together as a team. All those things are just those foundations that we come back to time and time again. And I didn't always have those in my marriage, as I've shared many times here with you guys. And it was really, really rough. And I've learned that there are skills that we can learn. So if we don't have them currently, they're things that we can absolutely learn. And I've got a toddler at the door.
It's always the beauty of these sort of situations, like working from home, right?
It is, yes. And her brother's watching her, but that doesn't always work out great. So as long as everything's okay, I'm just going to keep going. But if you hear some noise there, it'll be okay. And if I have to step away, then I will, because that's what we do when we're live. All right. So I'm going to do a little recap. I know Mark wasn't feeling well last week, so he wasn't here. And I know a lot of you really enjoyed this podcast that we did. And so I want to make sure that if you didn't hear that first podcast, go back and listen to that one. And if you're joining now, I'm just going to do a little bit of recap. And if you did listen to the podcast, did you apply some of those pillars, right? We did a live exercise where we did the first pillar all about telling the truth. And we talked a little bit about what happens when we don't tell the truth, how we lose that deeper connection, right? We lose the ability to hear our true inner self. We start to feel hollow. We feel anxious, insecure, and we feel like we're standing on quicksand, right? I talked about the client that we've worked with that said she felt like she had to be a false version of herself to be accepted, and that she started to lose who she really was. And we hear this a lot from clients. And what happens when we do this more and more is that anxiety then maybe starts to turn into even depression and hopelessness. And so we did that exercise there about telling a truth about some things in our lives right now. And you guys told me how good that felt, right? And how much lighter you felt, how much more grounded you felt. Even if you don't like where you are, there's something about just accepting where we are instead of constantly worrying or obsessing about where we are or worrying or obsessing about the worst case scenario, right? So it shifts us to recognizing where I really am and grounding ourselves in the present moment. And it helps us recognize how we actually really feel about things. Sometimes it's not that just we're not telling a truth to our partner, it's that we're not telling a truth to ourselves. We're not willing to really acknowledge it. We don't want to see it. We are suppressing it. We shame ourselves for the way that we feel. We think we shouldn't feel how I really feel. And there's something about just saying, this is how I really feel. So for those that listen to that podcast, how have you done in the time since then about telling the truth to yourself, to your spouse, to your kids, right? I'd love to hear some of your experiences. So as you're watching live, if you've done any of that the last week, let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear how it's been. And if you're listening to the replay, of course, message me or Mark and let us know, how is that shifting things for you? All right. And then the second part that we really went into was connecting communication, how to have conversations, even really hard conversations, even the conversations that maybe you've been putting off having because they're hard and you don't want to go there sometimes. But how can you have those kind of conversations and have them actually bring you closer together rather than feel more pulled apart, right? Instead of allowing it to escalate into an argument or just leading to more disconnection and more frustration, you actually come away feeling accepted. Even if you don't agree with everything, you feel accepted for who you are, and your spouse feels accepted for who they are. And not only that, but you feel filled by the conversation rather than drained by the conversation. So that's the kind of connecting communication we talked about last week. So if you want, again, we're going to go, we went really deep into that last week. So we may touch on it again because I know some people still had some questions about that. But that's a little bit of the recap there. So the third pillar that leads to today is our core beliefs, congruency, and accountability. And here's where we really need to start telling a truth about ourselves and where we want to have some compassion and understanding for the truth that's going on inside of our spouse and who they really are, as well as some perspective that we've all picked up limiting beliefs. We've all picked up false stories about ourselves, about the marriage, and about each other. And Mark, that's one of the big things that we teach here, right? Is how to identify what those stories are and replace them with a story that makes us feel a lot better and is a lot more in alignment with truth. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, I'm going to kind of explain like this idea just for a second. Like, we're talking about core beliefs, congruency, accountability. And this is kind of like a merging of a few different theories. So core beliefs is a big, big piece of like cognitive behavioral therapy. It talks a lot about what are your core beliefs and how do we adjust those beliefs? Whereas Carl Rogers, who is more like a person-centered approach to therapy, really thought that what's needed was for one to be congruent or authentic to who they are. Like being able to be open and, you know, not really hiding things, not really pushing feelings down a lot. And so this is coming from a place, and this is where Heather and I like to operate a lot. What are some good ideas that have a lot of overlap from from some very smart people. Like we like to borrow from some smart people. And like you were saying, like a lot of people do have limiting beliefs. This idea that, you know, like there's a lot of common limiting beliefs out there, and it really prevents us from doing much of anything. If we were to look at, say, law of attraction type principles, this is like another big theme within the law of attraction, this idea that if you hold on to some ideas that are very limiting, you're not going to move beyond them. You're not going to attract to you the things that you want. But like this is just basically the context, the setting behind some of these ideas.
Right. And for those who maybe followed us for a little while or know anything about me personally, this is like what drove me to create this business and to want to do this work was, you know, I didn't study Karl Marx or, you know, any of those things, but going through the challenges that I went through, I realized, wow, there are things that I'm really holding on to. Are they really true? And is it okay to let those things go? Some of those fear-based limiting beliefs that were really keeping me stuck. And we see that when we have beliefs such as, I mean, we're going to go through some and do an exercise together. But, you know, such as like, I can never trust anyone. People I love are always going to hurt me. If I have that as a dominant belief in my subconscious mind and in my personality, my perspective, the way I'm looking at the world, that cycle of putting myself out there and then people, you know, betraying me, having an affair, cheating on me, leaving me is going to repeat itself over and over and over because I believe that's true. And when I believe that's true, then I will continue to step into those same cycles. So yeah. Oh, awesome. We just got a message here from Crystal. That's awesome. Hey, Crystal, good to see you.
I don't know if you remember Crystal, Heather. I had a lot of conversations with Crystal, so I mean, it's great to hear back from her.
Yeah. She says, I want to let you know that my husband is home. That is awesome. Great job, Crystal. So a little segue there as we got some comments coming in. So thank you. Appreciate that. All right. So where do these limiting beliefs come from? Like, how do we develop them? Like, where do they really stem? Mark, what have you seen? What does the research show? And what have you seen in your own experience and with working with clients, you know?
My personal perspective on this is that most people have some sort of sensitivity, some sort of belief that they have developed a lot of times as a child. Like, I'll admit, professionally, I don't like to go too much into childhood issues, you know, at least concerning relationships. I do think it's applicable, at least to identify where some of these things came from. But somewhere in your childhood, it made sense to adopt one of these beliefs. Like, I think most everyone has some sort of sensitivity. Like, just to be very transparent, something that Jen and I have to talk about a lot, like, I have this sensitivity around, like, people are not going to listen, people are not going to, like, hear what I have to say. And, you know, so Jen and I have to be very aware of this. But some, you know, for most people, like, this was a message built up in childhood, either like through direct experience. Like, honestly, like I had a pretty good childhood. My parents were good parents. But like, we also had 8 kids in our family, and I didn't always, you know, there wasn't always a lot of direct attention for each of the individual kids. And I'm just kind of guessing that this is where it comes from. But essentially, we all kind of bring in some things from our past. Other areas where this could come in, like there are highly significant events in our life, positive or negative. If there's an affair, as an example, this is going to be a highly significant event where you're going to create a lot of meaning around it. Even further, like, you know, you might have a wonderful, amazing relationship, you know, where there's a peak here where you get married, and there's going to be a lot of significance and meaning created around this. Basically, these beliefs, whether they're limiting beliefs or really empowering beliefs, are all centered around very significant, meaningful events that we pull meaning from. So a lot of the times when we're not sure why your partner might be reacting the way that they are, A lot of times it is from those childhood things, but there very well could be more recent events or patterns going on that create that meaning within your marriage as well.
Right. And Mark and I, we study neuroscience and we're working with neuroscientists. Some of you have heard about the neurotech. So I tend to geek out on this, but why is it important? So you're saying like, okay, so everyone has limiting beliefs. So what? So why is it important? Well, the science shows that it is important because these are like hardwired programs in our brain, and we will continue to see the world through the lens of a story that we typically picked up on, like Mark said, before the age of 7, and it continues to repeat itself until we learn to replace that limiting belief. And that's the beautiful thing about neuroplasticity, which is science, and there's, you know, you can look it up. I'm not going to go into all of that, but it basically is proving that we can actually change our brains. Whereas before, scientists used to do the whole nature versus nurture argument. It doesn't really matter wherever we picked up these things. What matters is that we can choose how we want to go forward. And that's exactly what I did. So early in life, again, I had a good childhood too, no major, major trauma, but I picked up the belief that I'm just really not good enough, that I work really, really hard and I'm just not good enough and I'm never really going to measure up. And so looking through the lens of that, bringing that belief into my marriage created a lot of chaos and a lot of that evidence. Oh, see here, Ben's pulling away from me. He's distant from me. So there I go again. I'm not good enough. And then, oh, here's this thing and this thing. And here I tried really hard and it didn't work. And I failed at this business and I failed at that. And I'm just not good enough. Right. And we continue to build up evidence to ourselves that that's true. As equally as we do that, though, we can build up evidence of the true core belief that we would rather have. And that's actually the truth of who we really are. So, Mark, why don't we do a little exercise with everyone? Sound good?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go through a list of common limiting beliefs. And as you guys are listening, I want you to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, how strong this feels about you. If you're watching live, then go ahead and put that in the comments and just get it out there. So whatever the first number is that comes to your mind, that's the right one. So 1 means I'm not identified with that at all. Like I don't feel that. That's not true. I don't feel that about myself. I never think that. And then 10 being I'm fully identified with that belief. That feels like how I think about myself all the time. Okay. So scale of 1 to 10, first number that comes to your mind. So the first one, my biggest one and a lot of people's, but I'm not good enough. So where does that feel in your body? How true is that for you on a scale of 1 to 10? Second one, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. Maybe there's something fundamentally flawed with me. There's something intrinsically wrong with me. Okay. What about I'm afraid of failing, or even I am a failure? How strong does that one feel to you on a scale of 1 to 10? We've got some people weighing in on the chat. Thanks. We got some 8s. Awesome. I can't trust myself. Where does that feel to you? I can't trust others. Scale of 1 to 10. I can't trust others. First number that comes to your mind. People always leave me. Where does that one sit for you? I try really hard to get it right, but it's never enough. Where does that one sit? Scale of 1 to 10. How about money is evil? Rich people are greedy. Any of those? I can't be happy. I just can't be happy. I have to sacrifice my needs for others. How strong does that feel for you on a scale of 1 to 10? Someone else is to blame for this problem I have. It's someone else's fault. It's not my fault. It's their fault. How true does that feel to you? I'm not smart enough. I can't figure it out. I'm not capable. Any of those, scale of 1 to 10. What about it's the government's fault? It's my parents' fault. Bad things always happen to me. Bad things always happen to me. And there just isn't enough. Fill in the blank. There isn't enough money. There isn't enough time. there isn't enough love, there isn't enough. Okay?
Actually, like one of these that, you know, Heather went down the list and was skipping a few, but I wanted to add one extra in here. Someone else needs to fix the problem that I have, or I shouldn't have to fix this problem because I'm not to blame. I'm only pointing that one out because I see it get in the way of so many solutions. Like, you know, solutions where both partners kind of need to participate to make things better, but like this idea that why should I have to deal with this? I'm not to blame is a very limiting idea.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you. I think I accidentally skipped over that one. My adults. All right. So thank you. We got Eric, Crystal, Kenneth, and everyone else weighing in. I see a lot of 10s, 9, 7, a 1, awesome, a 5.
Man, there's some like high numbers here.
Yeah.
Like, so we're seeing like a high amount of limiting beliefs that keep cropping up.
Yeah.
For some of these
people. So as you do that, and I've done this many times. In fact, I do this probably once a quarter. I used to do it even like once a week or once a month. But I just check in with myself and I come up with others too that I notice in my own thoughts. But bottom line, guys, as you rate yourself on these things, if you rate a 6 or higher, then that is the dominant belief in your life. So if it's under a 6, then it might be kind of subdominant. If it's below a 3, then it's not the dominant belief at all, which is a good thing, right? It means that you have a more empowering belief that is the dominant belief. So that's some powerful feedback that you have for yourself. You can say, yeah, I'm really stuck on the fact that people always leave me, or I'm not good enough, or I'm afraid of failing, or it's not my fault, it's someone else's fault, they need to fix it, or I'm not capable. And we can say, okay, if that's the dominant belief, where is that showing up in my life? And when we do this with clients, it's amazing to see all the symptoms that these root beliefs cause, right? These are kind of the root issues that cause these beliefs to show up. And we can start to see, oh, wow, yeah, I can see that when my husband was a kid, his dad left him and then his mom died. And yeah, I can see like he probably has this underlying belief here that people I love always leave me because there's something wrong with me. And that can give us a lot of compassion for what they're going through. You guys following me so far? So it's a powerful tool to give feedback to what's really going on a subconscious level, on a deeper level. And like I mentioned earlier, the cool thing is, the best part of this is that we can change those beliefs. If you don't like how this is showing up for you in your life, if you don't like what it's causing for you in your relationships, the beautiful part is you can change it and you can adopt new beliefs. So, Mark, I'd love to hear from your perspective after working with so many clients, what you've seen happens in that person, like internally, in their peace of mind, as well as the results in their life when they do shift some of those limiting beliefs from one of those to a more empowered, healing, true core belief.
Okay, so almost universally when people start working with us, because of the nature of the problem, like a lot of people are in this desperation mode, like the idea is that I can't figure it out, I keep trying, but it's never going to be enough, this really high fear of failing, and because of that, often they're approaching their relationship feeling very anxious and desperate, and it's backfiring on a lot of people because all that anxiety, desperation, sadness, like there needs to be an attempt to draw the person in who's pulling away, and that's not going to do it. I do think that, like, if we're really going to address some things along these lines, it's really important to see where the problematic patterns are to begin with. Like, what is really supporting some of these limiting beliefs that are really playing a huge part in their life? You know, a lot of times there is judgment or fear self-defeating or self-pitying statements like, my husband or wife is having an affair and they're a terrible person and I need to go tell them that they're a terrible person to get them to come back to me. Like, makes sense on some level because, yeah, like, infidelity is not great. It makes sense to go address them, some of these issues. It's just, like, sitting in a lot of that judgment, self-defeating, self-pitying sort of beliefs, all the, it's not really going to go anywhere healthy. I personally always like identifying what kind of behaviors are keeping people in this sort of setting, and taking a look at what those behaviors are actually doing for the client, because a lot of times people don't just do unhealthy behaviors by themselves. As odd as it sounds, it benefits people to some degree, whether that is infidelity or alcoholism, drug use, whether that is angry outbursts or stonewalling. I think having a lot of, you know, for using Carl Rogers' theory here, having a high amount of empathy and positive regard for your own behaviors or your partner's goes a long way to just really figuring out where these patterns are coming from.
Yeah, agreed. And it becomes like that self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Mm-hmm. Is that I feel this way, so then I act this way, and then I act this way, and I get this result, which then tells me I should keep feeling this way, so then I keep feeling this way and believing this way, and on and on and on we go. And so there's two ways that we, you could call it attack this, but there's two ways we address it. That's a little softer. We look at changing the patterns, pattern interrupts at the behavior level, and then we look at pattern interrupts on the deeper internal level, right? And like Mark said, what's really interesting is that every single one of these more limiting beliefs that we have, they do serve us in a way. And this is what I love when I'm working with clients and we're identifying what some of their biggest challenges are and then what the I am statement is about that challenge. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just not capable. I'm not capable of figuring this out, or I'm not good enough, or, you know, I'm afraid of failure. And so for me, like the one of I try really hard and it's just never enough, right? When we actually look at what that's causing in your life, everyone's like, oh, it's awful. Like, it pushes my spouse away. It makes me miserable. It makes it hard to focus at work. It causes all this disruption in all these relationships. There's no way it's serving me. I am so done with believing this way and thinking this way. And then I'm like, okay, so how is it serving you? And they're always, and myself included, are like, it's not serving me. When you get to this place where you're like, I'm done. I want to think and feel and live a new way. But when we really look at it, there is a way that it is serving us. And one of the most powerful aha moments that I've ever had, and I know I've helped clients have working with them, is like, oh my goodness, it is serving me because it's protecting me in some way. It's almost always like a shield or a self-defense mechanism. Again, remember when you're a little tiny person and there's really big people in your life and there's a lot of things you don't understand and there's things that are scary and there's things that are painful. Well, you develop this belief about this to protect yourself from having to experience that pain again, or mm-hmm. so that you don't feel so afraid. So you have some measure of control or over something that didn't feel control. They're defense mechanisms. And we continue to carry them out and they do keep us safe in a way, right? That's why they keep showing up and that's why we keep using them, or they're serving us by helping us get needs met in a way, kind of like the drama triangle we talked about a couple weeks ago, Mark, right?
Yeah,
we have absolutely. This need. We want to feel a certain way. We want to have this connection, or we want to get energy in some way. We're trying to get needs met and we don't know how to do it in the healthiest way, right? The better way. And so we do it in a way that gets the needs met at all, because getting a met at all is better than nothing. If you haven't listened to that podcast, again, I encourage you guys to go back and really listen to that one on how to reduce drama and tension. But all of it comes from survival mode. We're in survival mode and we're trying to protect ourselves. We're trying to get needs met. And it kind of reminds me of like cats fighting over scraps. We feel like there isn't enough. And so we're all like in the cat pile with claws and teeth. And some of us are off sulking in the corner, wishing that someone would come feed us and putting on the pity face, you know, and some of us are attacking and then some of us are victims and it just makes a huge mess. So like Mark said, there are patterns of behavior that reinforce these things. These limiting beliefs do service in a way when we actually uncover how. That's a really powerful aha. I'm just going to give a quick example because maybe this is feeling vague.
Maybe a bit abstract.
Yeah, it is a little abstract. It's hard to understand our own brains, right? That's why I like the science to back up what we're actually saying, and that's what's super cool about it. But for me, like the belief that I have to work really, really hard and it's never enough, I realized was protecting me from if I put the blame on my actions rather than myself, then I could blame my actions instead of like looking at who I really, really am. So in that way, it was this buffer of I could look at my actions instead of looking at me, which felt more raw. It felt more vulnerable. And like I could be more exposed to being hurt. So it was a deflection. It was a buffer. It was a shield. So that's a way that I realized this, I was using it and it was serving me in a way because I didn't actually want to look at, am I really not good enough? Because that's the deeper level. And that deeper level is like, okay, yeah, I'm still struggling with, am I good enough, right? So how to change that, right? When we identify it, that's huge awareness. And so I applaud all of you guys for doing this and getting that awareness about yourself. Then we look at the symptoms, like where is this showing up in my life? Do I like these patterns? Do I like what it's causing in my relationship? How is it actually serving me in a way? And then we say, okay, am I ready to let this go? Am I ready to adopt the truth of who I am? I'll give you a secret. Truth of who you are is the truth of who we all are. That we are good enough. We are capable. We are intelligent. We are deserving. We are worthy. We are whole. We are healed. We are well. Like, we deserve abundance. We are pieces of divinity. That's the truth of who we all are. So then, Mark, what would you say is then the next step after we've said, I'm ready to let this go? How do I actually adopt like this core belief? How do I start living congruently?
I think it's really important to like, you know, beyond identifying like some of the problematic beliefs, but I think it's really important to choose what you want to believe instead. Like, have a conscious choice here. Like, actually think about it. It's really easy to be like, well, I just wish this wasn't the case. I wish I could get past this problem. Well, that's not really getting down to what's needed. Like, do you actually want to believe that you're good enough? I mean, and that sounds like such a simple thing, like kind of a no duh. Well, of course I do that all the time, but you know, it's really important to have a focused sort of idea of where you're going to. Now, there's a reason why we don't just adopt these more ideal or healthy beliefs. A lot of times there are problematic patterns getting in the way, like we've been talking about. Sometimes the desired belief is just too many steps away. As in, you know, a big common one that that we deal with High Thrive, like I ask people, like, well, what do you want to believe? They say, well, I want to believe that my marriage is salvageable. Great. Wonderful. Okay. When you present this to your spouse, like what happens? They're like, well, they reject it. Well, yeah, it's too many steps away. And so I do think that sometimes we need like a bit of a bridge, some acceptable beliefs or messages that stretch you a little bit more. A lot of times I'll give like a template, as in like, I want to move towards believing that I'm good enough. I want to be able to consider believing that I'm good enough. Or I want to have the desire to believe. Like, you see, each of these are like a few steps away. Like, that's a very low bar there. I want to believe that I'm good enough, or whatever the belief happens to be. At least identifying that and where you can stretch yourself, it makes it a more approachable belief. You know, like if you have a lot of room within your relationship, if you're having lots of healthy conversations and you're like generally doing pretty good, you have a lot of support in your life, full on, like I think it's great to have like a very specific belief, go right there. But like I said, a lot of times there are too many steps in between. The circumstances are not really supporting a really super healthy belief, and you might need to have some of this, these bridging sort of beliefs to get you there.
Right. I absolutely agree with that. Sometimes it is about taking baby steps, right? Of course, we'd love to go from here to the top of the mountain. but what happens is if you've been saying this whole time, there's something fundamentally wrong with me, I'm flawed, I'm broken, and all of a sudden you're saying like, I'm whole, I'm well, I'm divinity. You're like, your subconscious mind's like, no, you're not. Like, you just get that immediate kickback. Then it's not going to do any good. And those become those idle affirmations that don't really serve anyone. What we want to do is what's accepted by the subconscious mind. It's like, well, I would like to believe that I'm a good person, or I'd like to believe that I'm worthy of love, right? And your subconscious mind can accept that. Then that's the first, like Mark said, a really great bridge step along the way to get to that ultimate truth of who you really are. What about actions? How can our actions help support these beliefs as we're striving to embody them, like on a soul level, right? We're striving to embody them on a soul level. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of like faith is works, right? Is that we get into action to demonstrate.
Well, we see the same principle across many theories, whether this is a faith-based thing, like faith, if you actually believe in what you're saying, like you're going to take action. Or we could look at CBT, and the cognitive behavioral triangle is like each of these things affect each other, your thoughts, your mm-hmm. feelings, and your actions. We could approach it from law of attraction. If you actually want to attract things into your life, you're actually going to do actions that are going to attract those things in. But, you know, are you actually taking action to support your desired belief? Even if the one that you've identified is like, you know what, I want to have the desire to believe that I'm good enough. Okay, are you going over there and like talking to a therapist about all these issues? Or like, I want to be able to better consider this idea that people care about me. Are you actually going and talking to people and opening up to the idea about them actually believing that you matter, like them expressing that you matter? If you aren't taking those actions, it's so easy to find the evidence that things are just going back to the way they were. It's just, it does not work if you don't support it with some action. You know, for me, in relationships, or even with like personal work, what I like to teach is like you always explicitly, directly connect the message with the action. Even if you have to, even if you're walking around talking to yourself, I'm doing this because I want to have the desire to believe that I'm good enough.
Yeah.
I say, honey, I am coming here and talking to you because I want you to feel supported and like you matter to me. You know, like whatever it is that the belief that you're trying to adopt, it needs to have like that direct, explicit connection, because I think so many times people like just do the action or just have the thought, and it's not as powerful.
Right. Yeah, that's what we call anchoring. We mm-hmm. anchor in an experience and even a physical sensation with the belief. So there's a process to this, and it's my favorite thing to teach. It's my favorite thing to help people with, and I love it. And I love that there's neuroscience that proves that change is actually happening on a neurological level, and that there's ways that we actually can measure these things in ourselves and with our clients. And we can actually see data that we are changing and that new beliefs are forming. So one of the things that we need to do when we've identified, well, what belief do I want to have? What's an empowering belief that feels better to me, that will give me better results in my life? Then we condition that with action, and we give you specific exercises and actions to take, like Mark said, to couple, I'm doing this because I now believe this. And we give our brains more and more evidence that this is true. And change can happen so fast when you're actually willing to go to that level and do things. Yeah, we always talk about change is hard and change takes time. It does, but we've seen some incredible things. Like Crystal was talking about how when you, like, I wish I could find exactly where she had it here. Oh, yeah. When you shift one of those limiting beliefs, many of the others crumble. And that's exactly what happens. And when we heal things at this root level, then the fruit of the tree starts to yield good fruit rather than the bad fruit. So the results in your life show up. Like, the things outside of you start to change when you change what's going on inside of you.
Heather, I just want to add, like, this is actually why I am so excited for our new program that we've been, like, talking up a bit. Like, we actually have a tool that directly measures how comfortable are you with certain beliefs. Like, it's one thing to be like, well, I want to believe that I have a connecting relationship. And then we, like, actually have a tool where, like, is that actually true? Like, how comfortable do you actually feel with that? And I love this tool this program that we built up to actually really dive into these limiting beliefs, these beliefs that we want to adopt, and be like, okay, like, what is actually going on with this? It's very exciting.
Yeah, it's revolutionary. It's so cool. All right, so let's talk about the last piece here. So we talked about core beliefs. We talked about living congruent to true beliefs and conditioning those beliefs so they become the dominant ones. What about accountability? Why is that an important part of this pillar here, Mark, in helping people really change and be so connected with each other and accepted for who they really are?
Now, there's like accountability, I think, on, you know, a couple of different levels. Like, are you taking accountability or responsibility yourself? And are you supporting your partner, or are you holding them accountable for their own sort of things? I think a lot of this, in terms of like self-growth, self-improvement sort of things, it's really important to examine, okay, where do I actually have a lot of responsibility? Am I stepping into some of those victim roles, that victim mentality that we talked about? Or, like, you know, the other week when we were talking about the drama triangle, am I stepping into that hero role where I'm feeling resentful to always have to be giving? And it would be really easy to say, well, that other person, I'm always having to fix their problems, or that other person is always causing problems for me, or something along those lines. I think accountability plays a huge role in terms of, are you taking responsibility for your own feelings, your own actions, your own beliefs and thoughts? And are you taking responsibility for your partner's emotions? Because that's also just a really unhealthy place. I think in both of those cases, it's really important to really, if we're really trying to, I'm trying to search for the right word, but like, just take yourself out of it, not be so emotionally pulled around by these sort of situations. I think it's really important to talk about, like, what are the choices being made? Where is there clear communication? Where is there clear agreements with your partner or with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Now, me personally, I really, I don't like a ton of structure. Jen and I both kind of steer away from that, but we still have, like, some very clear agreements about our relationship. You know, things that we are like, absolutely, this is something that we expect from our marriage. And I think, you know, even applying that to yourself, if can be hugely important in terms of moving on, being a better version of yourself.
Yep, agreed.
I do think that there's like a big piece of this is we might say, okay, well, we made these agreements. Why aren't they being fulfilled? Obviously, it's because I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. That other person doesn't care about me. And I think that's the wrong direction to go with accountability. I'm much rather approach it from a more of a position of like, all right, is there some need to negotiate these agreements a little bit? Like, what's actually going on? Why is this agreement not working or not acceptable? Because, you know, deep down, if you're saying, look, husband or wife, I need you to be faithful, and they're not. Something's going on that's not really where that agreement isn't really working. Not to say that they can't be faithful, but like something's missing there, and there needs to be a way to come back to like the negotiation table, essentially, like to discuss what is happening here and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I think this is all really I was going to say easy. It's not really easy, but it's a lot simpler to just apply it to yourself. You have a lot of control over yourself. It's a lot more difficult when you have a partner who's not really in a healthy place and they don't want to agree to anything. They don't want to negotiate with anything. And I do think, like, you know, in terms of accountability, there is sometimes a need to come to boundaries and consequences and really like bring the hammer down. But like, I think that's a whole, we have a lot of discussions just around that one small topic, this one subset of the smaller subset of this whole topic today. But you know, certainly there is need for that in some cases.
Right. Awesome. So what happens here? Why does this matter as far as being able to talk about anything, being able to be accepted, being able to have this deep level of connection, this deep level of communication, this deep level of intimacy, right? Is that not only are we moving away from unhealthy patterns that are pulling us further and further apart, but we're moving away from unhealthy beliefs inside of ourselves that are causing a lot of those unhealthy patterns to show up. And so what we're really doing is healing things at the core level, to the place where I can feel like I know who I am, and I shift out of that feeling of insecurity and hollowness or fakeness, and I can be really grounded and present with myself and feel really empowered and no longer feeling like a victim, no longer feeling like I need to be the hero and save the day, and no longer feeling like I need to be the persecutor and tell everyone how to do it right. All of that just goes away. And as you do that, and as your spouse does that, you are able to see each other for who you both really are. And you will know you're so different and you just absolutely love it. And it's no longer threatening because you're no longer in survival mode. You're able to be creators. And we're going to go into talk about co-creatorship. Well, let us know. Do you guys want us to talk about co-creatorship? Of how to create a life together, how to unify your desires and your passions and your unique interests and talents and the thing that you want to do in this life. That's what the real heart of unified marriage is about, is healing unhealthy patterns in the marriage, in ourselves, so that we connect at a deeper level and are able to become creators rather than people that are reactive to life. We create life. So it's the true thriving instead of just surviving. And I'd love to know if you guys want us to go into that in a future podcast. We'll be happy to do that. It's kind of the crowning piece of the Unified Marriage Program. So let us know if you want to do that. And also let me know in the chat or the comments, or reach out and let us know, what really would you love to experience? Because this is what we're seeing clients that are doing this experience, and Mark and I have also experienced this. So some benefits that we see when we are able to have true core beliefs, live congruently with them, be able to have connecting communication, and be able to tell the truth, is that you both feel secure. You both feel safe. You both feel trusting, and you truly feel unified in your marriage. How good would that feel? Is that something that you guys would love to experience? Would you love to experience being able to talk about anything, anything, and be accepted? No longer feeling like you have to tiptoe around subjects, or you can't bring up certain issues, or, you know, you just can't go there with that person, but you really can talk about anything and you both come away feeling accepted. There's a whole other piece here that we didn't really go into, but what happens, what we've seen and the science is showing, is that when we free up emotional capital that we're using in survival mode and using just to try to get our needs met in the marriage, when we free that up and we're no longer in that survival mode, we're able to create more in our lives, create more with our children, create more financial abundance, create more impact in the world, and really step up and be who we're really meant to be and do what we're really meant to do in life. And what's really cool is that we've seen that when couples do this, their income often doubles, triples, quadruples in a very short amount of time, because now they have freed up all of this energy and all of this emotional resources that they were using before just to survive or try to get by. And now they're able to create so much more. Does that sound cool to you? That'd be a benefit you guys would like. And the fourth one is, of course, that you feel peace. You feel empowerment and joy as you live the truth of who you really are. So I'd love to know what you guys would love to see there. Awesome. Yay, Crystal says, one thing from my vision board came into reality. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And that limiting beliefs don't just affect your relationship with your spouse. It affects your job and other areas in your life, including relationships with children and friends. Yeah, exactly. And so when we change those, when we transform those and shift into who we really are, then that has a ripple effect into every area of life. So I would love to see what you guys would love to experience with this. And I have, again, that free quiz to see if you can restore trust, if you can have unity in your marriage, and if you would like our help to be able to get there. So I'm going to put that over in the chat. It's hithrivelive.com/trust. So if you're listening to the replay, hi, H-I-G-H, thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E, live, live.com/trust. And you can go ahead and fill that out and see what's possible for you and learn a little bit more about how we might be able to help you guys get there and even use some of the cool neurotech that Mark mentioned that is helping us actually see in real time that changes are occurring for both you and your spouse. So it's super exciting. Encourage you guys to go do that completely free quiz over there, hithrivelive.com/trust. All right, Mark, are you ready to roll out with our marriage mythbuster?
Yeah. So the marriage myth of this week is, you know,
I think it's of the decade, not just
this week. I see this comment many, 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 many times. My spouse is a narcissist. We could really insert any sort of extreme diagnosis here. But this is, I would say, the more common one, especially with marriage troubles. Now, here's the thing. So narcissism is, you know, so it's narcissistic personality disorder. And generally speaking, personality disorders are relatively rare compared to other mental health disorders. A personality disorder generally means that it's a long-lasting, persistent, very difficult to manage sort of issue. Now, I don't want to downplay like the actual cases here, but what I want to point out is that a lot of people like going to these sort of pseudo-diagnoses, like saying, well, my husband or wife is selfish, therefore they're narcissistic. My husband or wife is happy and sad, alternating, so they must be bipolar. Or, you know, things like this go on all the time. And it's really easy then to step into that arena and essentially remove responsibility somewhere within the equation. Whether like, well, they can't help it. They're a narcissist. Or I don't have any responsibility here because they're a narcissist. You know, and it's their problem. Now, obviously, you know, I don't want any of you to step away from this thinking, well, my partner's behaviors are my fault or my problem. That's not what I'm getting at. But what most of the time, what we see as quote-unquote narcissism is really mostly someone who isn't better able to adequately discuss what they're wanting or perhaps not seeing healthier ways to get what they're looking for. So what I will see quite often is almost like a pendulum swing. This is not always the case, but like there'll be a swing one way where they won't speak up. They'll be more focused on other people's needs and whatnot. And that builds up a lot of resentment. So they swing the other way and don't know how to be right in the middle so well. So they swing the other way and they are selfish. They ignore other people's you know, bids for attention or, you know, to be heard, things like that. Other times we might see like some more, just this lack of trust in themselves to adequately navigate their own needs without being a jerk about it, or that true narcissistic personality disorder, you can really define it at when there is like very little remorse or awareness, or really even whether it's even registering at all, whether their actions are affecting other people. You know, so if they're going about and saying, well, this is mine and this is mine and this is mine and you, me, and, you know, I'm going to do these things, I don't care about you sort of behavior, or I'm going to dominate the conversation. It's this sort of idea like that's how it just is supposed to be. Then there's no feeling whatsoever that that's wrong or that, you know, anything else should be considered. It's very, very different from I'm feeling hurt, I'm feeling like I can't trust other people, and therefore I'm going to be a little bit more selfish. Very, very different sort of circumstance. The second one is fixable much more, much easier than the first one, where there's just no recognition that there's any problem whatsoever persistently across their whole life. So what I'm getting at here is it's not usually helpful to put these extreme diagnoses on situations within your relationship. First off, well, most of us are not experts in these areas. Second of all, it takes away a lot of, you know, desire to do something about it. It takes away a lot of desire to look inwardly and see where you have some control. It takes away a lot of desire to hold your partner accountable and work on things with them. It takes away a lot putting labels on it. It's much healthier to say, okay, they're acting this way, what do we do about this? That's how I like to approach a lot of things, especially when a big label like this pops up.
Yeah, so much more empowered. We always want to work on where we can improve things, right? And step out of that drama triangle, because I noticed some patterns coming up there when you talked about the pendulum swinging one way to the other. So be careful about labeling and stepping into our power. That's where we can find real change and healing more often than not. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for everyone joining. I hope that you found this helpful and that going through some of these exercises brought you some new awareness about maybe where you're at and where you would really like to be. And we are more than happy to help you get there. If you haven't yet, I encourage you to book a free call with us at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. If you want to see how Mark and I can help you get to the next level of your marriage, help you end an affair, help you turn around a divorce, and be able to become the better version of yourself and experience some new things in your relationships. So next week, we're going to be talking about how to navigate challenges of different life stages in your marriage. You guys asked us for this. Some of you are going through some different life stages and you're finding some challenges with that. So we are going to show you how to navigate those and overcome those challenges. So thank you so much, Mark. Thank you everyone for joining.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.